Welcome back to another episode of Women Blazers. I'm your host, Deanna Witter. Today I'm excited to have Danita Johnson as my featured guest. Danita is the president and chief operating officer for the Los Angeles Sparks of the WNBA. In this episode, you'll hear Danita share her journey dedicated to leading a meaningful career in the sports industry, which without a doubt has been accomplished. Danita has had an incredible career path working in the WNBA, NBA, and G League, leaving a legacy at each destination and solidifying that hard work, passion, and belief in oneself leads to a fulfilling and successful career. Danita's Los Angeles Sparks are currently in season as the WNBA recently tipped off their 24th season with all 12 teams competing in what they call the Wubble at the IMG Academy in Florida. Be sure to tune in. You won't want to miss a minute of the action.
Do we have to be like men to be recognized?
Right.
It was just like, why are we still singing the same song and dance?
Right.
And so, Christine, who led the team at the time, was very much like, no, we can be badasses just because we are, and we don't have to be like anybody else.
So Danita, you went to Western Carolina University for sports management. What was your plan while in college? When you were considering your career?
Definitely to work for a sports team. As I went through the program, actually, when I went to the university, I wasn't really familiar with sport management, but I saw that it was a degree opportunity. And once I noticed that, I was like, oh, this should be interesting. And as I went through, by the time I finished up and was nearing graduation, for me, it was trying to figure out how to work for a sports team was a major key for me.
Now, what was it that inspired you to want to pursue sports management? Did you play? What was your background?
Yeah, I played basketball when I was younger. Sports was always a part of like our life growing up. And from there, I wasn't a good athlete. So I was like, I really want to find something that I was passionate about. And at that age, it was the only thing I truly gravitated to was sports. And so once I figured out that I could have a career in sports in a different capacity, I knew that that was the direction for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Similar. Like, you know, for me, you know, I wanted to make my passion my purpose, and playing basketball specifically and playing soccer was like the only thing I felt a lot of love about, you know, going into college.
And it was like, even socially, it just helped me grow, you know, playing sports. It was something that gave me a sense of grounding as a young kid. And so I wanted to make it a part of my life.
What was that break in sports career moment for you once you graduated?
Yeah, our last semester, we have to do a full-time internship. So I moved back home and was working for the Fayetteville Patriots, which is part of the G League. And that was my first like introduction during my internship. So the internship process that people talk about, I think it's very critical for understanding and just getting a little bit of perspective on the type of job that you want in your career. So I definitely believe in the power of internships. I don't say it's where I learned everything, be like, this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I think that was from like job after job, learning more and more. But I definitely think the internship set a foundation for me and introduced me to the space.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you did the internship, you graduate, and then you go back and actually launch your career within the G League. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. What was that? Yep. What was that first position?
So I was doing like CR work, sales, and game ops. So obviously with the G League during that time period, you know, we're small staff. Like we, I think maybe 10 people in the front office, if that. Mm-hmm. And so I was getting a little bit of everything from an experience standpoint. So it was great because I was learning the functionalities of the business from different perspective, and just trying to gain my footing in the very beginning, and trying and learning and really being exposed to things for the first time in my first role.
Mm-hmm. And that was D League days. That wasn't even G League.
Yeah, it wasn't G League. It wasn't G League back then. It was still D League.
Right. So from there, you move on to the Phoenix Suns. What inspired you to take the position with the Suns? And if I recall, you actually took a position in group sales. How did you define that path for yourself?
Yeah, well, in my second job with the Bakersfield Jam, which was another D League team, mm-hmm. at the time, Part of my acceleration was in the sales aspect. And I had really started to gain some footing, especially in like group sales, even though I was doing other responsibilities. And so I kind of randomly looked on Teamwork and randomly had sent my resume for the group sales position. And it was really focused on the W with some responsibilities on the MBA side for selling. And I was like, you know what, let's just try it. It ended up working out where I got the job. And I think for me, what drew me into the group sales world is really what I first started in sports. I thought I was going to be in CR. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to do community relations. And when I figured out that I could take the combination of working with nonprofits, different groups and organizations, but then selling that aspect, but still having some foundational pieces of helping community, mm-hmm. that's what really drew me into the group sales world.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. What was your biggest takeaway outside of that with working with the Suns? You were there for what, two seasons?
Three seasons. I was like, wait, I had to count too. It all starts to become a blur. Three seasons there. And I think my biggest takeaway, I think that's where I learned a lot of the structure of what professional organizations look like at that level. Mm-hmm. Up until that point, I had been with smaller teams. I hadn't worked in such a large franchise that was so established. At the time I was there, the Suns were going to the Western Conference Finals. It was really a way for me to see how the bigger business actually functioned when you have hundreds of people working for a team and what that looks like. And that was very impactful and eye-opening for me.
From there, you then leave and join the Tulsa Shock. What was it? Mm-hmm. At what point did you determine you wanted to take that leadership track and then make those steps to move on to the Tulsa Shock to become a leader?
Yeah, I think very early on in my career with the Suns and even my previous role with the Bakersfield Jam, I knew I wanted to lead. I also am one that understands the importance of kind of sitting in the pocket and learning your craft to be able to do so. So for me, it was about in those 3 years was like, how do I become the best group seller possible? How do I learn this business? And then how do I teach it to somebody else? Because we can be a great seller, but teaching is a whole other capacity. Uh-huh. And so I was really looking into that and really studying how to actually go to the next level. And I ended up having the opportunity in Tulsa to be the director of ticket sales. And that was just one of those experiences that I'll never forget and will always be grateful for, because, you know, doing a startup franchise after I had kind of experienced that some with the Bakersfield Jam, because mm-hmm. it was a startup when I went there, I knew that if I could start and build something, the skills that I would learn from that would carry me for years to come. And that's exactly what it did.
Yeah. And that's where you and I got to work really close yep. together, right? So I was at the NBA League office, and the Tulsa Shock were one of my teams that I worked with. And that's where I got to see you, to your point, grow and shine. And you were so good at your role, and you were so organized and focused. And you had this great perspective of really caring a lot about your people. And I remember that being this a big takeaway working with you. For you, what was, you know, some of your biggest takeaways working with the Shock outside of some of those beginning stages of the startup process?
Yeah, I think building structure and process, having the ability to for a new team to come in and actually build what the departments are going to look like, what the sales world looks like, you know, from an internship to an inside sales to an account executive, to building out programs, to building membership packages, all of that was part of that experience. A lot of times when you walk into situations, when you're leading, you're walking into something that's probably already established and you're making small tweaks. Right. But to me, going through the process and actually being like, there's no handbook here. There's no guide.
There wasn't.
To create it. For me to create that took a different level of concentration and focus. But I also knew I needed that to understand how to be better. Mm-hmm. And then the people management was, that's to me the hardest part of all leadership. Yes. Managing people is just a different thing. And understanding and really starting to understand what it truly means to listen, to take feedback, to watch people, to be able to read people and understand their flow of you know what, you can tell when they have a good energy day or a bad energy day, and how do you help motivate them in those moments? That is it is an art form to be able to do that. And I think, you know, people can be great sellers, as I mentioned before, but being able to connect with people in a genuine way and help build them and work with them, it's, that is like, it's a study. It really is. And it's not an easy thing. And it's something that I think can't be taken lightly when you move into leadership. I think it has to be one of the primary focuses when leading people.
No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's such a transformative process as an individual to become, you know, go from selling to leadership and understanding how important it is to consider everything that goes behind leading individuals at all layers and levels.
Yeah.
And meeting them right there at their place and helping them push through to that next level for them personally.
Yeah.
And then you got to think, you know, you're selling WNBA basketball in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Exactly.
It was good times. And then from there, you know, you were there for 3.5 years. You grew to become the senior director of ticket sales, and you were kind of on this path, you know, to kind of move into like what that next level was going to be. But I recall, you know, when we were working together, I think I went on maternity leave and I came back from maternity leave and I find out that you're not with Tulsa, you're in Washington.
Sounds about right.
But which for me, luckily, was another team I was working with. So I got to continue to work with you.
Yep.
What was that motivation for you to move from Tulsa to Washington and join the Washington Mystics?
Yeah, I think there's these points in our career where we work ourselves really, really hard at something. And you know, we always work hard, but there's these moments where sometimes we can work ourselves to the ground. And I think that's what I did in Tulsa, and not in a bad way. And I'm so honest about it, of understanding balance. But being a young leader at that time, spending 3.5 years there, it was great for me. But I think I let my work encompass my life a little too much at that point. And I needed to find a better sense of balance. Like, I was exhausted. You know, you start something and you're giving it everything every day. You're exhausted. And I really was. And I talk about that a lot. And like that mental health capacity of like finding that strength and balance for yourself. And so when DC came about, it was about me being in an environment that, one, I was a little closer to my family because I think I needed that support at that time to rebalance myself. The team itself was looking to rebuild and restructure a department that had been kind of like left by the, like hadn't been paid attention to at the level it needed to. And so for me to come in, it was about kind of taking what I had done over the last 3 years, all the mistakes, all the things I did right too, and being like, how do I make it more efficient? And that's what DC was for me. It was like, how do you speed up and make a more efficient process of what you just did in the last 3 years?
Yeah.
And I was able to come in and do that.
Yeah. Well, I remember because, you know, Mystics were one of my teams. And at the time, before you came over and really relaunched a dedicated sales team, the Mystics were sold by the inside sales team. So they were double selling. I think even triple selling, because I believe that they had Georgetown too. So they were selling Georgetown, they're selling Mystics, and they were selling, you know, whatever, you know, product they had from a Wizards perspective. And so, so now you come in and you have this opportunity to build out a dedicated sales team. Like you said, use the skill set and everything you had learned there at the Shock and now apply it here in there in DC. You know, what did you learn from that process of rebuilding that team?
I think for me, it was like, I knew then with that job and in that role, I was like, I can do this efficiently.
Yeah.
I can be better. Like I found the efficiencies in it and I found ways to relate to people in a different way. I was a better leader there than I was in Tulsa. And I'm not afraid of saying that, like it was, but it was the process. I saw things differently. I could forecast better.
I was going to say, I remember when I came back from maternity leave and watching you in this role compared to your Tulsa role, your confidence was so strong. And I remember just like, okay, how can I help you? I wasn't providing you, I was helping you at all, because it was more in the sense of like, what do you need? Like, I can get you resources if you need them. And I just wanted to get out of your way because you were just on fire there. But you definitely sensed the confidence that you brought to that. That position.
Enjoyed my time there. And it's funny, you know, I've moved around a lot. I've changed jobs a lot. And it's not even like a planned thing. And sometimes I worry people perceive that as like, oh, she job hops. I'm like, no, it's about me growing and being able to come into a place and effectively create change that's everlasting. Yeah. And, you know, I may not be there anymore or in a certain job anymore. But one thing I try to do is make sure I leave any job that I was at previously better than it was. I want to put things in process, put things in place that, you know what, even if I'm not there, you can still do it. You know what I mean? Create these patterns of behaviors and pride in the workplace. And that's what I try to do when I go, you know, if I leave a job, I try to like make sure that that is a part of it.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And it's interesting. I'm glad that you brought that up because that is a fear of the move, like moving from team to team and what perception that has on individuals. And one of the things I feel like that's been really exposed through this podcast and the conversations I've had with the other women that I've had conversations with is this is a part of the industry. You know, if you want to personally grow and you want to make a difference in a place, like it will require you sometimes to make moves, and it is completely, you know, acceptable. I mean, everybody is doing it because that's how we grow as individuals, as well as how we impact the industry as we grow as well. So, but I think that was a fear in the very beginning that you tried to stay somewhere and you tried to minimize those moves, which I think is completely out the window now.
Yeah. And I think it's something, and I know people say this a lot now, but I think it's something you have to be unapologetic at, mm-hmm. and especially as women. I think it's something we can't fear and know that, you know, we can't fear that. We can't fear the change. And I think for us too, there's a lot of other things that come into play, especially when it comes to family and things that we have a key responsibility for. And I think our notion with that is very different than our male counterparts. And it's nothing wrong with that. But I do feel that we as women, it's okay. It's okay. Yes. It's okay to take that leap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I hope more women take the leap, you know, at the end of the day, because I think that's where we're going to see more growth is kind of pushing through that fear and taking those chances, not on the opportunity, but on yourself, you know, because it's the opportunity that is right there for you to take. It's like you have to believe that this move is going to be what's going to help you keep growing.
Exactly.
You're with the Mystics, you're there for a couple of years. And mm-hmm. to your point, you're there with your family. You're now hopefully feeling more balanced in your life. And now all of a sudden there's this opportunity with the sparks that kind of pops up. Please share with me a little bit more about that journey and how you got connected and joined and took this opportunity with Sparks to become their vice president of ticket sales and service.
It was one of those moments where I told myself I wasn't moving again. I was like, I am not moving again. I like DC. I'll deal with winter. I'm close to my family. I'm not moving again. I literally had at least a good 5 years dedicated in my head to DC.
Yeah.
At least minimum. This opportunity came up, and it was actually a recruiter that found me. And we've been good friends ever since. And he reached out to me about the role, and it was something at first I was like, I don't think I'm doing this, you know, I said, but I'll have a conversation. It was something I wasn't really all in for in the beginning. And then I went out for a face-to-face interview. I met with our managing partner, Eric Holloman, and then they put me in a room with Magic, and I was just like, oh, this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing, guys. This is me coming to LA. It was phenomenal. It was such a good experience. And in that moment, I was like, this is something different. And this is not the sparks of what I know. And with this new ownership group, I just was like, you know what? I think I have something. There's something here. Mm-hmm. The other thing about this that really drove me to this role was I remember leaving Tulsa and feeling like I let the work take me over, right? With like a new team and everything.
Yeah.
And I made a promise to myself leaving that I would never do it again. And so part of me was very nervous in taking the job because I was like, I know the kind of work that you have to put in when you're reestablishing a team.
Yes.
Especially an independent team. And so I was a little hesitant at first, but I told myself and I made a promise to myself that I would approach this in a way that gave me a sense of balance. And this was my job to redeem myself from not balancing myself enough in Tulsa. And that was the perspective I came in when I came to LA. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you're going to be a better leader from the beginning. You're going to have a sense of balance for your own personal well-being. And you're not going to let this overwhelm you. And that was the approach I took. And it was part of the reason why I took the job, because I felt like if I stayed in DC, I don't think I've ever really said this publicly. I felt like if I stayed in DC, I wouldn't challenge myself enough.
Yeah.
And that the opportunity in LA was to challenge my mind, my mental health, and my abilities in the workplace, that I could go further. And if I would have stayed in DC, I think I would have been too stagnant. And it's not because of the company, and it's not because of, it's being able to teach myself to bet on myself, to take the risk on myself, and that I could handle the type of pressure that this role was going to be. And that's why I took the job.
Since you feel like you were able to actually keep that mental balance in that position, were you able to maintain what your goal was when you took it?
Absolutely. I definitely do. I remember even days when it would like creep up and I would feel like anxious or things would happen in the workplace, like how I handled it mentally was like, I would actually pause. And I talk about the pause all the time. My staff probably is like so over that word. But,
I haven't heard it. So let's talk about the pause.
So I talk about like the pause of like when you're feeling overwhelmed, when you're feeling exhausted, or when something just, you know, you just sit at your desk and you're like, I just can't get this right now. And you can't understand it. You're so frustrated with yourself.
Yeah.
Right. There's this thing. And I just call it the pause of being like, this is going to be here. I'm going to pause for a little bit and I'm going to come back to it. And I'm going to take a deep breath and I'll reapproach it. I don't care if I go close my eyes for 5 minutes, if I just put my music on for 5 minutes. And like, I started doing the pause and it has given me so much balance. I even talked to some of my staff. Like I said, I talked to my staff about it now. Like I can tell, like, you know, like you get that email and you like, you overreact, but it's like, you feel legitimate about it. Cause you're like, this is just ridiculous. Right. Like
all the time.
Yes. So like, I just practice this pause moment because I feel like my long term of what I want people to understand and know about me from leadership is more important than the short term of that moment.
Yeah.
And we still do it. And I still have days where I'm like, oh, but I've really gotten so, I've improved a lot of just being like, let me pause for a second. Mm-hmm. Let me just hold and then come back to it.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. And, you know, as you just described, like you as a leader and how important it is for you to have, you know, that perspective. And I haven't done this with anybody yet. So I was going to ask you specifically, because I think due to your path and the different leadership roles that you've been able to lead in and where you are today, you know, what are three words you would use to describe you as a leader?
I would probably say, well, sometimes it depends on the day, but
yeah,
I would say, for the most part, I think I know I'm a leader that genuinely cares. Mm-hmm. Like I genuinely care about my people and about the work we do. So I think there's this genuine piece to me that's very real. I feel one of the other words I would say is I'm aggressive. And I'm not afraid to say that. And I say that in the best of ways. Like me being aggressive is us trying new things, us pushing forward, us being like, okay, all right, it didn't look right this way, but maybe we could do it that way. Like I'm going to find a way.
Right.
And then I think the last word I would probably say for me as a leader, I think I have a sense of vulnerability to me. Mm-hmm. That lets you in, and it may come in different forms with different people. It's not the same with everybody, but I think having some sense of vulnerability is huge. When understanding that, like, I don't know everything, mm-hmm. and the people around me may know other things better than I do. And I think being vulnerable enough to admit that, being vulnerable enough to let that in and take that feedback is really important.
Now, before we start talking about you being named the president and CEO of LA Sparks, I wanted to take a second here because you actually made a shift from the VP of LA Sparks. You actually made a shift and you joined the LA Clippers, where you spent another 2.5 years before, you know, coming back and becoming the president and CEO of the team. What motivated that move? You know, and I can imagine for most people, they would look at it and be maybe a little puzzled about the path, and love for you to share a little bit more about what motivated the move, and then what did you gain from that experience with the Clippers?
One of the best things I ever did. Seriously.
That's awesome.
and this is the those things about like taking risks. And yeah. I'll say this story. I remember when I left the Suns, I remember my boss at the time telling me, he was like, if you leave this job, you never know if you'll be able to get back in the league. And I told him, I said, you know what? I have faith in God. Whatever is for me will be. And I remember, I'll never forget that. And I think this is another one of those moments for me of just having faith.
Yeah.
Right. And I went to the Clippers. I worked directly with Gillian, who's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I had such a good time working with her. And so I was director of business operations for them. I helped to oversee our G League team that had just been established. And so I was helping them come to market. I actually kind of did some interim stuff as their president because we had to hire somebody for the role. But to be kind of to the point on this is that one of the best takeaways from that was having a moment, now that I'm back in my role with Sparks, was like having a break to remember what happens when you take the ceiling away.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you work in women's sports for a long time, or anything that feels like it has a sense of, I don't know if oppression is the right way, or a sense of less than that's perceived.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of have this ceiling unbeknownst to you of how high you can probably make something. And as much as you may say it's not, there's this thing of being like, how we can maybe only get this far because of people's perceptions or thoughts of us. Mm-hmm. And going back to the NBA was that wide opening reminder that there is no ceiling, that you can ask for anything, that you can push for anything. And that time there really gave me that. It gave me that refreshingness of like that power of sports and its ability to transcend across all borders and to all people. And when coming back into my role with the Sparks, I remember having like one of my first meetings with the partnership team, and we were talking about, you know, the pitches they had out currently and the value. And I was like, why aren't we asking for more money? And, right?
Like, they're like, well,
right. And I said, if we don't understand the value of us, nobody else will.
Right.
And, but that came from watching that. It's like what we said, like, you know, some of our, I don't want to make this male female, but like that male counterpart that's going to go in and just ask for the raise, even though they don't deserve it. Right.
Right.
Or we're going to do all the work first, come up with a whole game plan and walk in with a paper and everything of like, this is what we did. Can we have the raise now? Like, that's the difference in that world for me. When we look at like, you know, we look at some of what we do in our female athletics versus male athletics, like take the cap off, take the ceiling away. And that's what that job did for me. I walked back into my current role without a ceiling. And I'm like, oh, we can do this because they can do it too.
Right. No, that's a very good point. I mean, personally selling both, you know, WNBA and NBA, now in my current role, you know, overseeing the Dash, who's in the NWSL, and the Dynamo, very specifically on sponsorship, you're absolutely right. I mean, from a valuation perspective, so often we devalue, or it's been devalued, that the women product is not as much. But at the end of the day, if you're selling something that's against engagement, impressions, and you're getting the same amount, regardless of the brand that's behind it, then why is the value less?
Exactly.
And I don't know where and who created those rules, but you're right. Like, at the end of the day, you have to remove those stigmas because the value is delivered.
Yeah.
And it should be, the investment should match the value.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes across the board. That has many layers of
yeah,
many layers to it. As we talk in that space, but
yeah.
No, I think that's fantastic, and I love that you took that let's say quote unquote risk, because at the end of the day, I mean, when you believe in yourself and what you're able to accomplish, like any move you make, if you're taking that move to better yourself and to grow and to your point, maybe even take off some blinders that could have been there because of not being able in that space, take it. Mm-hmm. And it's not a barrier to anything. You have an opportunity to go to where you are. And so you go back.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like for me, like with transitions and jobs, it's what you're talking about there. Like I've never left a job and been sneaky about it. I've always been forward.
Yeah.
You know, and I have open dialogue, and it's scary. And I think that's also part of what has kept my relationships intact, of being open with people, being honest about things, and always making sure while I am there, I'm doing the best work possible. Like, you're going to get the best of me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to, you know, halfway do something. I'm going to give you all of me to based on what you expected, and hopefully more.
So now you've had the honor to serve as the president and CEO for the Sparks, which is one of the most historic WNBA franchises in the league, for this past year. You know, what has been the most rewarding experience in this first year for you?
Outside of just like some accolades, I would probably say the best thing for me is that we did an employee survey probably like my first 30 days of work. Between my first 30 and 60 days, I had to work with my HR team to do like an employee survey to get a baseline of how employees felt about the workplace and all this stuff, right? And I just wanted, and then we transparently hosted a session with the league office, and they came in and we actually talked through a survey. You know, a lot of times you do surveys and then leadership just sees the results and you make changes and the staff doesn't see it, right?
Right. You're not very transparent about it.
We did a very transparent survey. We actually did a whole download of the survey with the whole entire team, at every single level, all in one room, and talked through it. And so for the first year, outside of all the other business things, I took all the feedback from the survey and we worked on different pieces to help improve employee satisfaction. And we got the survey back. We did the survey again at the end of this year, and our satisfaction rates like increased dramatically. And that to me is the biggest, like, of all the things. And we got Franchise of the Year this year, and that was great, all of it. But, and I'm super proud of them. But something about that for me, just, it worked. It made me feel fulfilled. It's like you're doing something right, because the people are starting to, they're enjoying what they're doing. And I'm not saying we're perfect. We still have things that we're going to continue to work on and grow. We're going to get better. But I think all the accomplishments and awards that we won throughout the year, and things that happened, hitting our goals and our sales numbers, like we exceeded in both ticket sales and sponsorship this year. But I think it all played into the little things of creating an environment for our employees to be able to succeed, to do their best work. And we're not done yet. So I'm like, man, we got this, and we did these things, and we're not done yet. Like, we still have more to do to invest in our staff and our team. And, you know, we're trying to continue to do so. That's probably the best thing for this whole entire year for me.
Obviously, you spent a lot of your career in the WNBA, and you're my first guest that's representing the W. So thank you. What do you love most about the WNBA, and what do you feel like the league represents in the landscape of sports?
What we do every day is bigger than us. That's like one of the most inspirational pieces about it. When you work for an organization that is pushing something forward that is not considered a traditional type of thing within the world that we've grown up in. Uh-huh. And every day I know the work we do is helping for generations to come. It's a different level of satisfaction. It's just different. It's just something that is doing. And that's the thing. You see people leaving companies and doing different things, right? Because they feel like, especially like with, they talk about like our younger generation, like they're tired of working for these companies without a sense of purpose. Right. People want to know what the long-term change is. And, you know, we did a change of like our mission and vision statement, and like one of the things I talk about is that this is not about just winning, right? We're gonna have small wins throughout the day, but it's about the long term. It's an infinite game. It's the ability to say 10 years from now the things that we did are still having effects on our community. They're still inspiring people, and that's what I think this league represents. That's what I think our team represents, is the ability to create space like that, and it's invigorating.
Going off of that, I couldn't agree more. And the difference that the WNBA makes in our society alone is so significant. And I personally, you know, I think it's, you go back to the stigma of women's sports and everything else that you had mentioned earlier. What is it, and what would we want to see, or what do you want to see in the sense of talent coming into the W from a business perspective, and not avoiding the W or the G League situation, you know, like everybody's trying to go, you know, often you talk to kids coming out of college and, you know, up and comers, and they're like, oh, I want to stay in the NBA and MLB and the NHL. Like they're thinking of the men's big sports, but yet, you know, there is a lot of value in connecting talent with, you know, the W specifically. You know, what would you say to those individuals that are contemplating, you know, taking those opportunities?
Yeah. I think, you know, you have to change your perception of thinking of something like the W or any other sport that's not part of like the Big Four, or Big Five as a less than.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, I would say to industry leaders, it is our responsibility, whether you're in our league, the NBA, the NFL, MLB, whatever it may be, to be able to also be able to say that it's not a less than, because the youth, their perception is coming from leadership.
Right.
So it's our responsibility. And I can't be the only one as just being from the W to say it's worth it. We need other advocates to say it's worth it, that work in our industries, that are at these universities, that are pushing these youth towards internships. Like, it's the responsibility of those that have influence to also be able to talk to the value of what it means to work for the W or NWSL or other leagues around, even minor league baseball. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's also our responsibility for messaging. And to those hiring in the Big Four, Big Five, it's also their responsibility to see value when people apply that come from one of our leagues.
Uh-huh.
And realize the work ethic and the things that they learn is of value.
So along your career journey, you know, obviously you've moved up the ladder at a pretty aggressive and fast pace, actually. I think. I hope you feel the same way.
I do.
Okay, as I say, quick. You're,
I feel like things have happened fast.
you're young, and you're now the president CEO of a sports team. Dream come true, I would imagine.
Yes.
What's one challenge you feel like you faced that helped you grow personally and professionally?
I honestly think it was my time in Tulsa.
Yeah.
I think that changed my trajectory. I really do. I think it gave me a grit. Like it gave me, like you said, when you saw me in DC, like my confidence was different.
It was.
And then I think there's something about that experience that just, it changed me. It truly changed me. And I will say between that role and this role here, when I came in as the VP of ticket sales for Sparks, when I first joined, it was the first time, too, for me that I was at an organization with minority owners.
Yeah.
And as a Black woman, I hadn't experienced that level of being around other African-Americans with that kind of success. And it also changed my perception of what was possible for me as an individual. And that was another sense of confidence that really came in for me. And I know it's a lot happening in the world right now, but when we talk about the representation and what it means, like, just the same way it's important for young women to see young women, I mean, to see our female athletes.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand how important it was for me to see that in the workplace until it actually happened. It took 15 years before I ever worked for anybody that was African-American.
Yeah. I mean, it's
like,
it's reality, right?
Yes.
I mean, to your point, you know, I've been in this industry, this is going on my 16th year, and I personally have never worked I've never worked for anybody of color. So not just African-American, anyone of color.
It's important for us as a whole, no matter what position you're in and who you are, to be a part of the change.
Yes.
Like to be a voice and to really look around and understand the power that you have, and especially when you're in hiring positions.
Uh-huh.
And then I think at the other part is what I talked about, like at that university level, I think there's this educational component from high school to university of educating athletes on the ability to work on the business side. And
yes.
I think that's something that we have to continue to push and not look down on them for not being able to do all the internships because they're teams take up all their time when they're in college. Like, we just have to give them opportunities. We have to create space for them.
So shifting gears here a little bit, I'd love for you to share a little bit more about your lifestyle. I mean, you shared, you know, how important it was for you as you got into the Sparks, like this have this sense of balance, especially with your mental health. You know, what do you enjoy to do outside of work? What's something that you dedicate your time to doing that's not work related at all?
Yeah. Well, I love to travel. Obviously, I'm not doing that right now. So I love traveling. That's one of my favorite things. But other than that, I love cooking. Mm. It's become like a thing. I didn't cook before, and I literally started like making eggs. I'm just being like, what do I like? What do I not like? I felt like what's that runaway bride where she does that? I think that's in the movie.
Yes, that like all the different, yeah. All the guys that she dated, there's a different egg that she liked or something.
Yep, that was me. So cooking, I love cooking. That's one of my favorite things to do. It's something that's calming in it, and then being able to have a result at the end of being like, oh, you did this, and like having friends and family. I love to work out. That calms me a lot. So that's something else. I'm an avid Peloton rider.
Oh, I was going to ask you, what's your workout of choice? Yeah. Peloton.
I do Peloton, HIIT workouts, and I like to lift weights. That keeps me going. I mean, other than that, honestly, I literally just love hanging out with my friends.
I need time.
Yeah. Like my friends, and we get to like, whether we go on like, you know, we go on a bike ride down by the beach, or, you know, go to a restaurant and just hang out. Like, anytime that I just get to be around my friends, and, you know, I have some phenomenal women that I'm very close to that we just get to be ourselves and laugh and joke around. Like, that just makes me happy.
It does. Well, good. Well, once you're able to travel again, do you have a place on the map that you are like, I want to get here as soon as we can travel again?
I'm thinking maybe Greece. I did Italy in November before everything happened, which was one of my dream vacations. Yeah, I didn't want to come home. and so potentially Greece is an option. It's a strong contender right now.
Okay.
I'm a fly by the seat of the pants kind of girl when it comes to travel. Like, I'll book a flight like the week before. That's part of my problem. So we'll see what happens. I'll get in the mood and be like, this is where I want
to
go.
Oh, to be a woman without kids. I'm so right. Jealous of you. Oh, to be able to just be like, yeah, I'm going. So we had, my husband and I had planned to go to Ireland in April. And so we were going to celebrate our 10th wedding anniversary, and obviously everything got canceled. And so I told him, I was like, even though it's like canceled, it's not canceled in our heads. As soon as we can travel, we're going to try to get out to Ireland. So
that'll be fun.
Yeah, that's on the list.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Have you been to Italy?
I have not. We've been to London, but Italy's, I'd love to go.
You'll be like, we're moving the kids. We're going to find an international team. It's over.
The only place I've ever felt, we went to Hawaii 1 year, and like within 3 days we were in Maui, and I was like, okay, I started to plan like, what business can I start? Like, I was like, you know, you start to like write up like the business plan to stay and never leave Maui. But that's great.
Yeah.
Love to hear your perspective here on what advice do you have for men or women who are looking to grow their careers in the sports industry, who might be starting out in a very similar place that you did.
Don't be in such a rush. I know this sounds weird, but sometimes we're rushing through the moment to get to the next moment. Enjoy the position you're in and get the most out of it. And then the next thing will come at the timing in which it's supposed to. And there's going to be moments where you have to push forward to get to the next role. But like, really make sure you're getting the most out of your current role. Sometimes we get so distracted by title and environment at times that we forget that we're actually learning something because we're so ready for the next thing.
And that's a wrap on episode 10 and the halfway point for season 1. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you to Danita for sharing her journey and insights with all of us today. As always, I encourage you to follow the podcast on Instagram at Women Blazers to stay connected and to tap into the Women Blazers network. Look forward to episode 11, dropping Monday, August 17th, featuring Erica Bernadas, Senior Manager of Corporate Partnerships for the New Orleans Saints and Pelicans of the NFL and NBA. Until next time, have a great week.